What's Always Drink the Good Stuff?
It's about food, art, travel, music, culture, lifestyle. It's interesting conversations with interesting people. And yes, sometimes it's even about drinking the good stuff.
Hello, everybody. Our guest for today is someone I've known for a very long time. He strikes me as someone who goes after things that he wants and he gets them. And he wears many hats in this industry, and a social media influencer, event organizer, marketer, but best of all, he's a salesman.
Good Lord, you made me look so good. You can't even see me yet.
Let's welcome the man, the legend himself, Alan Sansar. Alan, welcome to all.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me today.
It's wonderful to have you here. How do you describe yourself?
You know, I just tell people I'm like a promotion machine. Like, if you need publicity for something, I'm the right guy. And I think that really delivers best in my personality. You know, I also wear these cute bow ties and walk around, so I'm like a brand of my own. So as soon as I'm with somebody, all of a sudden they become a brand, like an independent brand of their own too.
Well, that's absolutely. I mean, you are the brand, yeah. And whatever you do becomes an extension of your brand.
That's very true.
And that's what can you give us a description of what are some of the things you do?
So I own a marketing company, and within that marketing company, we do creative services and events, right? Before the pandemic, the company used to do lots of events. As you know, pandemic obviously stopped all that stuff. So we kind of teeter-tottered a little bit and moved into the aviation world. So we have our new niche is private aviation. And that's nothing new. I'm a pilot, but I also used to do commercial aviation. So I'm very familiar with the business of aviation. We just went from the commercial stuff to the private side. And that's kind of where we reside. So we do creative, anything from graphics, web, social, especially social, as you know, yes. For these companies.
Before we delve into those, I have a personal question.
Sure.
What does the word Samsar mean?
So Samsar is a short, my grandfather's last name was Samsarzadeh. So what I did was I chopped it because most Americans can't pronounce that. It's also a mouthful, and I made it Samsar. But in Arabic and in Persian, it has multiple names. Depends on where you live or where you're from, and it means completely different.
Well, in my understanding, yeah. Samsar means someone who gets things done, who brings people together and facilitates things.
Right. It's so funny. That last name is so fitting of me.
Absolutely. That's, right. that's why I brought it
and
up.
And that's exactly what my grandfather did. It's so strange.
That's why I raised it. I brought it up right now because I know what that meant, but it fits you perfectly.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's God works that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When was the first time you started working in social media?
So social media, when Facebook had started, right, we started really developing and getting our hands dirty with Facebook. And back then, you had to be through, I think, a university or a college organization in order to be part of Facebook. Right. That's quite a ways back. But before that, there was MySpace and all those other things. So we were kind of involved in that stuff. And not that they didn't have power. MySpace did have a lot of power. But I think when Facebook actually kicked in its infancy, as soon as we discovered it, it would sell things out for us. So we would go in with a festival with 3,000 or 4,000 guests, and Facebook would sell it out in 2-3 days without spending money. Wow.
Right. The power of social media and social marketing.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. Like, and it's still valid to this date. Now they've kind of figured out they can monetize it. So now they charge people for advertising, and lots of people drop magnanimous amounts of money on social media. We don't.
But even though it did sell, you still had to know how to sell on social media. I think that's when your skills, your talents came into play.
Right. So, I mean, part of it was, you know, look, I'm a marketing guy. I have an MBA. I know what's going on. From the numbers is what kind of you start with, right? And then you develop your plans. Now, we did have some hiccups, you know, but we learned our way just as anyone else did. And I'll tell you a funny story. When Instagram had started, we had a vice president of public relations that worked for my company. And she said, hey, Alan, you need to start an Instagram account. And I was like, Instagram account? Are you kidding me? That's like for girls that are posing with their shoes and clothes. You know, I don't need that. So she's like, listen, let me just start one for the company. And then all of a sudden, we saw how Facebook lost power and Instagram just instantly took over. And I think Instagram is pretty strong, but, you know, TikTok is right up there with them.
Right. You started in the event planning business initially. That's where I met you. Wine events, wine tasting events. Correct?
Well, so our company, the marketing company, started by doing graphics on websites. So we were one of the first companies that developed Flash. I don't know if you remember it back in the day where you could do videos and animation, which was, and we were like, this is not going anywhere. We're like, this is going somewhere. So that's where we cut. That was our infancy, where we started with that. And then we developed into social media and events. And what happened with the events was, that's not something I ever imagined myself being into. Was I did a course with an organization called Landmark. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes, I do.
So I did the course. And out of the course, they said, you got to go out there and create a project that gives back to the community.
Okay.
And I was like, are you kidding me? I'm looking to make money. I don't want to give back. This is completely insane. So that project, I developed an event. And that was my first event ever. There was an organization at Van Nuys Airport. There was a beautiful building. It was an art building. It had a beautiful art gallery. They donated the art gallery. And when I say art gallery, 60,000 square feet. Wow. I think that's what they gave me, right? And the rest of it just kind of fell into this. You are supposed to go and have conversations with people that would support you in the event. So I spoke to some performers at Cirque du Soleil. And they donated their time. They did a whole entire 30-minute show for me for free.
Wow.
I talked to a couple of liquor companies. They donated liquor. And all my family cooked all the food. And we had 150 people show up. It was insane. I mean, I was at the event looking up as these performers are doing their thing, right? And I'm just stunned. My brother-in-law taps me on the shoulder and goes, you need to do this for a living. And I kind of turned to him. I'm like, you are crazy. Well, look, that was, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago, and here we are now. And from there, we invented and created all the food and wine festivals that we owned for decades.
I remember all over California, Nevada. Yeah. It was humongous, thousands of people. And it's amazing. But that changed with COVID.
Correct. So when the pandemic happened, unfortunately, the festivals themselves started going bankrupt because a festival, you invest money into it hoping that the ticket sales and the sponsorships cover that. But since we had already invested for the next year, the pandemic shut us down. There was nothing we could do.
Correct.
So all that money kind of disappeared, evaporated. And there was no way to recover that from anybody. It's just, you're a business owner. That's what you get, right? It's a risk. Correct. And so I was in a little bit of a panic. I didn't know what to do. And I did a lot of internal searching. I called a lot of my friends. I'm like, hey, can I work for you? Can I do something? Do you need some marketing? And it didn't really go anywhere until I think I just sat down. And I think my wife told me, she said, where's your passion? Where was your passion? And I sat down. I said, you know, I always wanted to be a pilot, right? So I started flight school the next day. And I started training as a pilot. And as I'm training, I was like, wait a second. Your friends are in the private jet business. So I called them. I picked them up as a client. And then I started going to the big private aviation shows, right? And I walked from booth to booth like a sales guy, right? Now, mind you, I'm 49 years old. Now, for some people, that's not old. For me back then, I felt pretty old. 49 years old. I was a CEO of a company producing some magnificent events. I was on every single TV station probably back then, right? And I'm walking around handing my business cards to people that are somewhat half my age. And really, they're being dismissive. And but I didn't give up. I went from booth to booth at this big trade show in Las Vegas until this one lady that met me, her name is Michelle. And I spoke to her for a little while. She took my card and she actually put it in her like a pochette, you know, the little things they carry. And she called me a couple days later. Wow. And then she hired my company. And it just developed from there. So, you know, we just moved up into private aviation world. But those events are all kind of stagnant now. We're not really going back to any of them.
It's interesting, the power of persistence.
Yeah.
And it just takes one, and then it evolves over time, grows as you're doing a great job for them, word of mouth. I mean, it's not a big industry. It's a small industry. A lot of people know each other.
Correct.
So it's just a matter of word of mouth, and you being you, you just catapulted. That's wonderful. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think, look, I can't really give credit to one thing or another thing. However, I think all my education and all my training really had me kind of prepared for something like this to happen. Because I know there's a lot of people that lost tremendous amounts of money during the pandemic. I also know people that became billionaires right. as a result of the pandemic, right? So what I knew from my past was you have to invent a new path. Because that's dead, then you got to find something new. Now, it was extremely difficult to go to school and learn aviation. Number one, I think it was my age. Number two, I think in my head I'm a CEO, so why should I listen to you, right? So you have to have a lot of that, swallow your pride, put it away, and start from fresh. But a lot of the training that I had from that organization, Landmark, that really came into play there. And you really have to reinvent yourself.
Absolutely. Right?
And that's what I did. But I'll tell you, when I walked into one of those trade shows, I went to one of the biggest aviation companies, right? Biggest in the world. I'm not going to name them. They listened to me. They had two security guards come up to me and literally walked me out of their
really?
Booth in the middle of the trade show. So, you know, I that moment, I felt so, I think, cheapened as a human being. And I just remembered, look, this doesn't mean anything. Just walk to the next one and to the next one. I mean, there was people laughing at me as I walked around because I was like, listen, I'm in marketing. I know how to do social media. I'm an expert. I love to do some marketing for you guys and blow you up. And back then, really, social media wasn't such a big thing for these aviation companies. Right. Now it is, right? Even the CEO of some of these big companies, they're like me on social media making videos. So that kind of was the beginning of it because most private jet companies really hide their aircraft, right? They don't want to be seen. That's private. That's part of it, right? And now I think it's a little more trending to show your business and your aircraft inside and outside so people see it and they want to use it. And I think I brought that marketing knowledge with my aviation knowledge and made something amazing.
But, that gave you more credibility also.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think becoming an actual pilot, which is I've tried my whole life to do that, right? Was a very big deal. Now, I can touch on the pilot thing if you want a little
Please,
bit.
Please, yes. Okay. I love aviation.
So look, I was, I think, 6 or 7 years old, right? And I remember this like as yesterday. I was sitting on top of a ladder in the middle of my parents' living room, right? And my mom had this little container, you know, like an airline container, but you know, kids that have these little compartments. And she had made food like it's an airline, oh, wow. right? She would give it to me and I would pretend like I'm flying the plane on top of a ladder. So ever since then, that's like one of my first memories. I've always wanted to be a pilot, but because of the revolution and we moved to the United States, we didn't have money. So I couldn't go to the aviation schools. And it's kind of a heartbreaking, right? But I was smart enough. I continued my education. I even went to medical school, as you might know. But that just wasn't the route, right? And it wasn't until 49 when I became a pilot. But I love it. It's my passion. People are always like, well, do you play golf? I'm like, no, I fly.
You know, you hear a lot of stories about people who get their high school degrees at the age of 90.
Right.
So 49 is a very young prime age for a pilot. So you're not going to be flying for Delta.
Right.
But you fulfilled that need, something you wanted to do, a life goal.
Yeah.
Which has opening up doors right now for you.
Yeah. And you know wonderful. Something? I was in the plane alone for the first time, which they call a solo. And as you do a solo, your instructor gets out and then you taxi the aircraft, which means you move the aircraft into line to be the next to take off.
Right.
And when I made that call to the tower, and the tower said, you're clear to take off, that moment, you can't trade that moment for anything in the world.
Absolutely.
Because you know you're so fulfilled. It's this goal you've wanted your whole life. and you actually get to fulfill on it in that moment, it's just tremendous.
I remember watching a lot of your videos in the training on the in the propeller planes over here, Van Nuys Boulevard,
right?
Van Nuys Airport.
Right,
we're 2 blocks from Van Nuys Airport here.
It just happens that way, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's one. That's commendable. I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
That's awesome. So you do work within the private aviation niche.
Correct.
What other industries or businesses do you cover?
So we still do marketing for the medical field. We still do marketing for a couple of fashion companies. I'm not going to name them, but there's some top brands that we do marketing for. And I think that's – and we do one of the – I think I would like to call him a celebrity chef. So Chef Katsuya, who owns restaurants all around the world – we are their agency of record.
And I'm a big fan of them.
I know you are. You spend a lot of money at the restaurant.
I know quite a few people who work there.
Yeah.
They're all wonderful. The food is always consistently good.
Yeah.
And they have multiple locations. And,
they sure
and
do.
They do an awesome job.
Yeah, I think the food is fabulous. And I think Chef Katsuya's philosophy is that he keeps the price point at a place where families can come and eat. And he serves the best food, the best cuts of fish at a reasonable price, compared to other companies, which are obnoxiously expensive,
correct, right?
So you can eat there once or twice a week instead of eating there once on your anniversary.
Correct.
That's
no, they're consistently great. I appreciate that. How do you decide what companies to work with, what industries to work with?
So honestly, I love aviation. I've loved it my whole life. And even I said before that we used to do stuff with commercial aviation. So we started with Southwest, JetBlue, United, Emirates. So I did marketing with all these companies over the past couple of decades. But the private aviation really touched me and I love it. You know, it's just something as soon as I'm at the airport, I'm instantly turned on in a very good way, right? I don't know if it's the jet fuel or if it's the jet exhaust or whatever it is, you know? It's like an aphrodisiac. Everybody has something. Some people hold the putter and they're like, yeah, you know, that's their turn on. For me, it's being at the airport. And I like to grow and expand my business in that world. At the same time, one of the lessons I learned from the pandemic is you have to live your life. Right, you have to enjoy every single day, because I realized part of it was I was working so hard I forgot life,
mm-hmm.
and so I started living again at 49, in a great way. Now, mind you, financially it's not the same as it used to be, because I take so much time off. According to my wife, you never work, right? So it's not as much income as there is, but there's a lot of fulfillment and enjoyment. And when people come to me and they're like, hey, Alan, let's do this. And I'm like, you know what? I'm happy. I don't mm-hmm. want to take something else on, especially if it's not related to the aviation business. But stepping into the private jet aviation has also brought me now to the yacht world.
Yes, I'm going to talk about that, yes.
Which is spectacular, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. You know that, yeah, exactly, because but what are some of the challenges in what you do?
Give me a little bit more specific. Cause.
Okay, well, let's take it further. People see you flying in these $80 million jets,
right?
Being in Monaco for a yacht show, being in London eating caviar with some champagne, or being...
Don't give away all my secrets.
I mean, being a globetrotter, being everywhere right. in the world, one day here, the next day there, right. You're hardly in L.A. Though people only see the flashy good sign, the right. places, the luxuries. But they don't appreciate how much work goes into getting there and what kind of sacrifice you're making, personal sacrifice you're making, yeah. being away from your family.
So there is a lot of that. Number one, being away from the family takes a toll. Mm-hmm. And I've created where we take specific vacations just family-wise. And then I'll take a private vacation just to kind of decompress, right? and I think everybody needs that. Some people are learning to do that family vacation thing separately of their own personal vacation. But look, behind the scenes, there is a significant amount of work that gets done. There's a lot of research. Also, keep in mind, I didn't just jump into this thing, right? I went to school. I got a master's degree, right? I did go to medical school and I dropped out, thank God. You know, and then I went and became a pilot. And the education is continuing. I'm not stopping my education. You know, something, I don't know if this was a saying or somebody told me once, was as soon as you stop learning, you die.
Right.
And I really believe in that. As long as I'm learning, I am moving forward. But behind the scenes, I'm continuing education in the field of aviation. I know I'm a little bit older, but everyone around me is like 17, 18, by the way. So I'm continuing that education. And then behind the scenes of what people really aren't seeing is the research, the knowledge gathering, and the handshaking that you have to do to get there. Now, I was very lucky because my company, Barcelona, we had a lot of brand relationships before I stepped into this. It was just a matter of reinventing myself from Mr. Food and Wine to Mr. Aviation, right? That took a little minute. Because nobody really understood why the crossover, right? Now I've made that crossover. It was difficult. You have to put up with a lot of stuff. You have to put up with a lot of doors being shut in your face. But once you step through it, you've got something new and you've completely reinvented yourself.
And you brought up the yachts. Is the idea the same? Marketing to yacht people versus marketing to the private jet people. You're dealing with the same customer base, correct?
Somewhat, yes, same customer base because I'm only dealing with the super yachts, not the smaller vessels. Anything above 10 or so million. So that kind of speaks in the same niche or the same level of clientele. And I've always operated in the luxury space. Even with the festivals, even with the brands we work with, even with the fashion brands, right. Like anytime we did something, whether it was like Jimmy Choo or Christian Louboutin or Clicquot or whoever it was, right? It was always dealing with the luxury market. And I've done a couple of things with the non-luxury market. This is just where I chose to operate. And you can operate anywhere you want. You know, you can operate in this small 10% or right. You could operate in this 80%. Your choice. Right. I just like it that way, as you can tell, right? I like to look spiffy. I like to do pretty things.
Yes, you do.
I like to eat pretty things. I think we both like eat pretty
things.
Yes,
we do.
Right? And I think I like to operate in that sector, and that's where people have always recognized me in the luxury sector.
And in that 10% luxury sector,
correct,
you have to cater to people's needs and wants, which are completely different than the bottom 50, 60%.
Absolutely. Because, look, it's easy to satisfy people that are in the, I don't want to put this the wrong way, but the lower demographic, right? So the lower 60, 50% of the demographic. You just give them something magnificent and they wow, right? The people on the top, they've already had everything. Mm-hmm. So there is nothing that you can give them. Doesn't matter the vintage of Dom or the type of caviar or the celebrity chef I bring with me, right? It's not going to make a difference to them. It's the matter of how you present it and who's doing the presentation. And that's where I excel at. You know, I know how to bring the luxury to the luxurious, right?
Okay, that's true. Now let's talk about ROI, return on investment.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Yes, it's something that is not a very popular thing to discuss.
Right.
Because it's difficult to, not monetize, but to quantify.
Right.
Can you talk about that, please?
So I can tell you back in the day, we can kind of start at the beginning where I started my company. And I worked for free. Mm-hmm. I would find anybody from a relative to a restaurant down the street, whoever. I literally walked into restaurants. I'm like, listen, your menu board is ugly. I'm going to redo it and give it to you. So I would go home, graphic design it with my graphic designer. We would make them like a template, something, take it and show it to them. They're like, wow. So yeah, I worked for free for a long time, but that's what it takes, right? Until people start recognizing you. So there's negative ROI there.
Right.
But as the events kicked on, I think the ROI was about 200, 210%, right? And we used to produce some significant events right. back then. That's a lot of money. But that came from brand partnerships and the ability to know how to do the business and where to do it. Again, most of those events, about 80% were in the luxury market. And I think we did a great job. We were one of the first people in that sector and in that category. We did so many events during the year. that helped develop the company. Those, that was about the ROI category the that business was in. And now, because the overhead's less, right? So we have minimum overhead. You're looking at about 40% return on whatever you put down, which isn't bad compared to what other companies are doing, like about 20%, right? But it's just, you got to remember the market's smaller and you're only making the 40% right. of it on the return.
But are customers skeptical initially when you tell them that we can work with you and get you a return on investment? Do they conceptualize it? Do they see it? Do they know what you're talking about?
No.
But marketing is kind of a fluid thing.
Right.
It's a long-term commitment. And that's what you're doing. You're doing marketing for these companies
Correct.
In various forms. And it may be difficult for them to see where you want to take them.
Yeah, I mean, so part of it is to teach them about the long game, right? And that's where I operate. I operate in the long game. You know, I'm not one of those guys that's going to come in and be like, home run. No, we hit a home run in about a year or maybe 2 years. Mm-hmm. But when you hit that home run, you've developed so much, it's stunning what you've done. So the first thing is to teach them about impressions and brand development, right? And once you've built all that up, then they kind of really understand where they've been.
Right.
So I don't take projects. People call me all the time. They're like, Alan, we'll give you 10%, 20% of this thing or whatever percent. Go do this thing for us. And I say, no. My answer to them is no, this is not how we work. This is the system we use. And then I pretty much guarantee results for people. And I know because I don't take what I can't deliver. Just
but
because
they have to
stick
with the program.
Correct. But just because there's money, I don't take it. And I think a lot of companies do that and they cheapen the industry and they cheapen themselves, right? Because they're looked at as, I don't know, con artists or not, but you know, they're constantly taking in money without delivering anything. The best thing with me or my company is that as soon as you engage me, all of a sudden your social media engagement goes through the roof. Right, because I pretty much marry myself with brands.
Yeah,
as you know, like Katsuya Group, right? I'm synonymous with their brand and right. with Chef Katsuya. So people now kind of recognize as married together. Some people even think like I work for him directly, right? Which is no problem. I love working for people. So for me, that doesn't make a difference. But I think you should always be in the long run or the long game, right? You should always be looking at a year or 2 years ahead. If you're looking too short term, you're losing already. Too short term, 2 to 6 months, you've got blinders on. You can't see anything. But if you're looking 2 years out, and then that 2 years out, so you've developed this big brand 2 years out, you just kind of create steps on how to get there.
Right.
All of a sudden, it becomes so easy to deliver, right?
So you've been working at it for a while, so you've been preparing for it,
yeah.
doing what's necessary. How do you stay authentic with your brands?
Wow, how do I stay authentic with my brands? Well, I think the best thing to do is, number one, work with the brand that you like. Right? It's the most important thing. Because if I don't like you, and if I don't want to sell you, then I'm completely inauthentic when I'm pitching you or I'm speaking about your brand. That's really important. There's a lot of people out there that'll take this bottle of water and they're like, that's delicious. Buy my water. You know, but behind it, they don't really believe in that, right? Mm-hmm. And at some point, that catches up to them. I don't. Right? As soon as I sat down, didn't I say we should cover this brand? Because
right.
this is not a brand I work with. Not anything wrong with the water, but that's just how
Correct.
It is. I think that's what keeps me authentic with my brands, with the partnerships and the people that I work with. Because, I mean, you know me. I don't do what I don't love.
That's true.
And I never answer to money, ever. I always walk away. Because I know in the long run, I make the money anyway. And the most important thing is God's got my back. I mean, if you have God with your back,
right.
forget, you don't need to be jumping on every opportunity that comes your way. Like, you take the opportunity. God presents, like, 20 opportunities, right? You pick the one you're in love with and you become successful. I think if you do what you love and you love that brand, authenticity is right there. That brand becomes your heart. So, you know, when I talk about Katsuya Group, Katsuya Group is my love. You know, Katsuya Group is one of the companies that carried me through the pandemic. Other companies dropped me.
Yeah.
You know, I was working with some major women's shoe manufacturers. As soon as the pandemic started, they dropped my marketing company. And I understand they had to hedge their loss, right?
Correct.
But Katsuya Group, even though they were closed, they said, hey, we're going to keep you on. We're going to support you through this thing.
They're good people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I work with companies like that, because it's like family.
You know, I see you posting all the time, whether it's videos or pictures, whether it's on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, stories. Are there days where you don't feel like posting? Are there days that you don't feel like generating videos to post? How do you motivate yourself?
So I think you got to do what you love.
That's true.
Right? If you don't love it, step out. That goes to your authenticity question.
Right.
Like when I am posting stuff, I'm posting my day. Right? Or when I'm posting a video of a jet, it might not be today's jet. It might have been a couple of days ago. It might have been last month's jet. But that's my life I'm sharing with you, right? Or I'm on a, you guys probably see this all the time, I'm with a flight attendant, right? So that means I'm on that plane. I think that's what you do.
By the way, I want to offer my services as assistant.
Anytime. Come on board. You know, I tell people all the time, I'm like, look, anytime I'm flying, come with me. We'll go have some fun.
Yeah. So is that what it is? Because you love the brands, you love what you're doing, it doesn't become an issue. Is that what you're saying?
It doesn't. But, you know, look, I'm a human being.
Sure.
Just as you are. The first thing you do when you wake up is what? Oh, my God, it's the end of the world, right? It's
no, like, not me, actually.
Well, some people are like that, right? You wake up and you're not at 100%. You might be operating at 50 or whatever. And I would say you, I mean me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean to put you in my shoes.
I appreciate that. Yeah, okay. It's fine.
But I wake up in the morning, I'm completely unmotivated. Right. So the first thing I do is I say, you know what? I'm going to create my day to be amazing. And I'll come up with some amazing word before I put my foot on the floor. And then I get my day started. I work out, get my endorphins. And I love running. Doesn't matter where I am in the world. I don't know if you see me, but I run. And I think that really sets the tone for the day. Because once I'm done with my workout, the rest of the day, it's easy, baby. Right.
It's a mindset. It's a mind thing. You got to get your mind ready.
Absolutely.
And the rest of the day will follow.
Right.
The body will follow the mind.
One of my favorite things to do, and I learned this from an amazing woman, was when I wake up in the morning, I say, you know what? I'm going to go make magic and miracles. And I can't even say that without smiling, right? Because it just inspires you. And how could your day not be magical and miracles? Because the power of my word is what creates my day.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say, I'm going to have a crappy day today, it's going to be like grumpy, right?
Absolutely.
That's no. God's going to deliver grumpy, because that's what you said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Is there such a thing as burnout?
I don't think so. Now, there was burnout pre-pandemic all the time because of those festivals. They were very physically and mentally challenging. And I don't know how much people know about festivals, but when you're doing a festival, you're at the mercy of multiple things. So you're at the mercy of the city, you're at the mercy of the police, the fire department, the health department, and you're at the mercy of the elements, rain, snow, wind. We've even had tornadoes hit our events. Oh my God, it's been some bad stuff. So I lost my track. What'd you ask me?
About burnout.
Burnout. So,
and the pressures.
There was so much pressure when you're getting all these permits and then you're always worried about the weather, right? I would constantly burn out and hit the wall. I mean, I constantly was exhausted. Even though I had the same routine of waking up and creating my life, I just needed more time off. I didn't see that. But now I think I'm a little bit older, a little bit wiser, and I can't physically do what I used to do. So it's a kind of a happy thing that those big events are gone because I can't physically deliver on them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I am careful enough to schedule time off, vacation time, and off time. I literally will go in the middle of the day and go, you know what? I'm done working. And I wish people would do that more often. I'm literally working at my computer or working at the airport. And I go, you know what? I'm done for today. I wrap it up. I finish what I'm doing, and I step away.
But not everybody has that luxury.
Not everybody has that. So there's people that work on 8 hours and they got to be at the shift right. or whatever that is, right? So, but they could create a routine where, look, for the next 4 hours, you're going to kill at this thing, right? If I'm flipping burgers, which I did, by the way, I made hot dogs and burgers in my when I was growing up here. You do the work, you finish, and then you decompress before you go to your family.
Okay.
Right.
Do you have a favorite platform to work on? Is it Facebook? Is it Instagram? Is it TikTok? Is it LinkedIn? What?
Oh my gosh, there's so many.
Right.
And I think they're all interconnected. I think I've become like social media, right? I don't know what the better word for it is. It's like my whole entire day mm-hmm. is social media. And that just, it was, same applies to many people because look, social media, in my book, it's free. If you're doing it right, you shouldn't be spending money. And as a brand, if I'm speaking about myself, it is a lot easier for me to deliver everything on social media than anything else. And
but do you have a favorite platform?
I don't have one, but you know, most of my power is on LinkedIn and Instagram. You know, I put some stuff on TikTok, but it's hilarious. I even have my daughter. She's like, "What are you doing, Dad? This is embarrassing." But you know, I don't make funny videos or anything like that. I just make business videos all the time. But it doesn't really deliver much on that platform as it does on the other ones.
To that point, given that your entire life is on these social media platforms, how do you deal with privacy, your own privacy? Or do you... You know, it's not an issue for you, or you have a private. Obviously, you have a private life. That, but there's a. It's a very common. Not a very common. It's a very tight rope you're walking between you preserving your privacy and doing what you do.
So I'm going to answer that. It's going to take a little bit.
Please.
Okay. So back in the day, where I used to be on all the different TV segments and news, and I mean, I had a lot of PR around me back then, right? One of the production companies approached me and said, "Hey, Alan, we want to make a TV series about your life. However, part of that has to be your wife and your family." And when I went to her, she said, "Absolutely not," right? Because of the privacy thing. I was really beat up. I was really hurt. I was like, "Oh my God, I'm going to be like the next big hit on TV. And mm-hmm. I don't get to do that now because of this." And
the company, the Shaws of Sunset.
Right. I mean, come on. It's like everybody wants to be famous.
Absolutely. And yes.
Innately inside me, I think I just want to be famous. Honestly. In a good way, not in a bad way. Yeah. No, I want to be like Tom Cruise.
Okay.
Not Tom Cruise in Top Gun, but I want to be like him. I want to be famous. Walk around and be recognized.
Right.
I think that just gives you a feeling of acceptance.
It's good for the ego,
right?
Too.
And it's good for the ego, right? Luckily, I'm a little bit taller than Tom Cruise.
Yes.
But hey, the privacy issue is a really big deal. And I think what I've learned on social media is delay or postpone the locations I'm at, right? And that gives me that essence of privacy. And I never post my family.
Okay, hardly. Can you explain that, please? Delay or postpone your...
So because I travel a lot, right, the worry would be your home's empty, right? So I've learned, it's not something I created, I've learned that you schedule things so that the bad people in the world don't know where you are when you don't want them to
right.
know, right? And that really does help with the privacy concern. I also don't really post my family life, you know, maybe a birthday or a special celebration. I don't really post those things. And I keep that in a separate compartment. I don't think that's something that needs to be publicized. Now, I know there's people making millions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. They'll take their daughter and they'll feed her some food or something and then to get yeah. brand sponsorship for that. I don't believe in that because that's something my wife taught me was we're not going to sell our family and you sell yourself and your clients.
So is that's how you balance it?
That's how I get the privacy factor.
Along the same lines, is there such thing as work-life privacy? I mean, work-life balance?
So I hate that question. Because a lot of people dive into that question. A lot of people dive into that question, right? They're always like, hey, work-life balance. I'm like, it's one life. I don't get it. I don't get the separation people have. Now, I get separating your time, not being a workaholic. That's a whole different thing. But you have to do what you love, right? If you don't love this that you're doing or the wine thing, you would have an absolute miserable day. So correct. When you do what you love, the hours don't make a difference. And when you do what you love, I think it takes shorter amount of time to accomplish things. Then it doesn't matter so much my personal life or my business life. I think it's one, right? I am Alan throughout the whole day. Now, yes, sometimes I take my bow tie off. I don't wear a bow tie all the time, right? But
sometimes you become chef.
Sometimes I become chef. Do you see me in a chef coat with a
knife?
Yes,
I have.
That's hilarious. And, you know, sometimes I'm at the beach wearing shorts and a t-shirt. No problem. We're flip-flops walking around. I think all of that is fine. But there's a point where I can turn on or turn off whatever I have to. But this is me. This is my authentic self. I don't make something up. Like, I'm not on camera, right? This is just who I am. I'm fun. I love it. I enjoy this. Like, I love talking to the camera. That's kind of part of who I am. And I think if you have that, then there's no separation of the two, right?
No, the way I look at it is, if you want to accomplish things in life, if you want to get from point A to point B to point C, you got to do what it takes.
Correct.
And it's difficult to balance things. As long as your family is taken care of, as long as you are there with them as well.
Right.
Like this morning, I've been up since 4 o'clock in the morning because I had a lot of things I needed to do today.
Right. And plus, oh my God, I got to go talk to the bow tie guy all day.
And the pressure was boiling. Great. But the point I'm making is that we do what it takes. We are the ones who make the sacrifice for our families.
Correct.
To make sure they're provided for, they're taken care of. But we still need to do what we need to do to get us where we want to take the family.
Absolutely. And I'll give you a little tidbit. Like, I was in Europe, in one of my favorite places. I was in Monaco. And I had an option to stay 5 extra days or run back to my family. And I'm like, look, go to your family. Why do you want to be here? And, you know, some alone doesn't make a difference, does it?
Mm-hmm.
You have to experience it with the people you love.
Correct.
Otherwise, what's the point? You know, experiencing things alone is wonderful for a minute. But then you really want to have someone there so you can experience
the
best parts of life, right? And then that creates the memory. Otherwise, it's just past instantly.
Right. No, I agree. How do you handle negative feedback, if you get any?
Oh, I get negative feedback. As you can imagine, you know, I'm a guy wearing a bow tie, running around, making a lot of noise. So a lot of people instantly find that problematic, right? They're like, oh, wait, this guy's loud, he's obnoxious, we can't deal with it. I think anyone that's giving you, first of all, I don't think it's ever negative feedback. I think it's just information. It's how you perceive the information, right? You take the information and you spin it into gold, right? So if someone calls and says, hey, Alan, we just lost $100,000 because of you, I make that $100,000 loss into a $1 million lesson for them. Like, wow, this is what we do now. Wow, look at what we learned, right? Because most people look at it and go, oh my God, we lost $100,000. No. We learned a $1 million lesson. Now we're going to really make more money. And that's the biggest success for marketing people is that they do 10 things and one works. You never know what works, okay? Even social media, you never know what works.
Correct.
You throw 10 darts, one of them lands, and you're like, that's what we're going to do.
But I was more referring to you post something and some guy says, oh, you're doing it all wrong, or you don't know what you're talking about, or that was a bad video. Things of that nature, which are, they don't appreciate what's involved. They have the energy, they spend the time to write those comments there.
So block. Now that, so I look, a part of that is I've learned you don't engage negative, right? When people want to be in that world, you don't engage it. You usually say thank you or whatever. And that kind of deflates the issue that they're bringing up. Now, when I was getting into the aviation business, there was a lot of negative feedback, lack of knowledge. I'm still ignorant about the business, right? I'm still learning. But there was a lot of negative feedback about, oh, this is the wrong thing. This is not how that works. This is not how that flies. So I think you take things as they come, you turn it into gold, and you step by it. And if you really can, the best part of social media, block, right?
Yeah.
But I still get it. You know, people make fun of me. No offense to gay people, but people call me gay all the time. I'm married, I have kids, I'm not, but they call me all the time because I'm wearing a bow tie.
You're stylish.
Or whatever my style is. I mean, I get that all the time. That doesn't mean it's a negative thing. I take it as a compliment. I'm like, wow, they're attracted to me. Now I'm doing something right. See, you could take it any way. And that's the same thing. And I make that example for many people because that feeds into exactly the same compartments of anything else being negative. You know, people are like, who's that girl next to you? Da-da-da-da. Where's your wife? That's just stuff.
And a lot of people are envious, let's face it, right?
Well, there is some of that.
Envy is big, I mean, right. Obviously.
And you know, look, I created my life the way I created it because this is what I love to do, right? I don't make fun of the guy that goes and watches horse racing, right? I don't like the way horses smell, so I don't go to the racetrack. But there's people that love that, but that doesn't mean I should make fun of that, right? And I think people make fun of things or people are negative. Number one is because they're uneducated about it, right? They're uninformed. That's a better word to say. They're uninformed about the subject. And number two, I think they're just sitting there going, how is this done? And if you actually reach out to that person and you engage them, you really find there's a human being behind that negative comment. You know, someone that's hurt or doesn't know what to do next. Generally, that's what's there.
That's so true. I've heard Gary Vaynerchuk say that when he gets negative comments, he goes, it tells me that that person is hurting, has got some issues that he wants to deal with, and he makes these comments against me. Doesn't change anything to me, doesn't hurt me. It tells me more about them than about me.
Correct. There's always something behind the words, right? There's some hidden object from the view that they don't even see themselves. But if you do engage them, generally they cry. You know, sometimes I've called these people and like, listen, I have a family. What you're saying on social media is not nice. If you like, give me a call. And then they call me, and at first they're like, oh, upset. And you're like, shame on you. Why are you promoting alcohol? I'm like, okay. You know, first of all, it's to deflect whatever they're saying. Don't deal with what they're saying. Because what they really mean is the stuff behind it, is they might have some hurt. They might have a loss or pain or whatever it is. But for them, it's their blind spot. I can probably see it in a second when I'm talking to them on the phone. And they end up usually getting deflated, deleting their comment or post, and say, hey, thank you. You're really great. I'm going to follow you now. That's how that works.
Excellent. Are there any trends we should be looking for in social media?
So look, right now, I think the state of the world has caused the problem with TikTok. And I think once that alleviates and peace comes back to our lives, I think TikTok is the more powerful media and TikTok will take over as it was before. So I would really keep my focus on there. As you know, AI is just blowing up everywhere. So now you've got AI meets social media. It's going to become amazing. The problem is, where do you find the trust in social media now, right?
And that's so true. You don't know who to trust anymore.
Right. And there's a lot of fake influence out there where people are talking about specific things and means nothing. And we all just need to learn. We need to create filters for the stuff, right? And filter out what's real and what's not. I think that's the next step of social media. I don't know how it's going to be invented, but we need some kind of a filter to filter out the fluff that people are creating out there.
But you're not asking for governmental control.
No, absolutely not. I think the government needs to be completely separate. They need to step out.
Correct.
I think what they did with TikTok is completely unfair and belligerent. And government should have nothing to do with business anyway. I mean, the lobbyists own our government anyway, so don't even get me started there. But.
No, absolutely. We don't want any government to control what stories you can see, what you cannot see, what absolutely posts not. You can see, what posts cannot be there.
Look, I grew up in the Middle East, right, my first couple of years, and I know governmental control. They choke you to death. Americans haven't seen that yet. So they're always okay with, oh, let the big brother control this part. Or no. As soon as they take one piece, they're going to take more. And you don't want that because it will cause suffocation. And America doesn't need that. We're such a wonderful place to live. I love America. I love living here.
Absolutely. How do you measure success in social media other than by followers or likes or subscribers?
So I think when people become informed about your brand, whatever it might be selling shoes, might be selling a watch. I think once you start informing people about the brand, you've created a success. The word everybody uses is buzz. I think that's already money. The money might not be in your pocket right now, but you're going to make it eventually. And I use that model for car companies all the time because I used to work with all the big brands, right? Mm-hmm. There was one brand we worked with for 9 years, one of the most prestigious car companies in the world, right? And when you step on their gas, it goes boom, boom. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
But so the trick for them was to show them, look, if you do a specific thing on social media and you might not sell a car today, but the person looking either is going to have an accident or has a child that's going to need a car or is going to get married, they're going to need a second car or something's going to happen. At some point, they're going to need it. They're going to come to you. Might as well have your brand present, right? So, and for any marketer, we understand value is right there. Value is not in the actual sales of a product. Value is creating that relationship with you. So when you're looking for something, you pick it up. And the most basic way for me to display that to you is when you're walking through the aisles of a grocery store, you know, that middle shelf, that sells you everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Right? So the marketers are really focused on that middle shelf. So you grab that bag of potato chips instead of the other one, right?
That's true. You don't want to be at the bottom.
You don't want to be at the bottom. No one will grab you.
Right.
Now, there is people that go down there. That's a whole different world. Okay, that's because of their pocketbook and they're watching it. Or that's just where they have to operate. But I think marketers are smarter because of social media. And the analytics are so amazing. And they're present all the time. Back in the day, we had to wait for a TV station to give us the report on a TV ad. Right, mm-hmm. So we'd have to see, oh, this is what we delivered. Now it's instant. I mean, you can do it yourself as a person. You just go and you view your analytics and you're like, oh, 5 people in China saw my video.
And how important is that in your work?
So I think exposure is the key. I am Mr. Exposure. I expose you to so much of your demographic until at some point they use you. And that's the model I brought to private aviation. Because they really didn't believe in that exposure part. They believed in a very intimate part. And I think what's made me successful in the private jet business is that I create exposure. And when you're ready, you're going to call me. And you're not going to call the next guy.
Besides wanting to be Tom Cruise or be as famous as Tom Cruise,
that's funny.
What are some of your other goals you're working towards?
So I'm working on my next level of pilot license, right? At some point...
Is that jet?
I want to fly a private jet. Yeah, I want to fly a jet. And I want to do that for myself. Like, I don't want to fly for a company. Nothing wrong with Delta or United or any of those companies. I don't want to work for them. I don't want to work for a private jet company. But I want to get in a plane and just turn it on and just put
just
it
like
in all
Tom
the way.
Cruise.
Absolutely. I just want to feel that. Now, I've flown jets before, so I know the experience and the feeling. But there is no feeling until you are what's called a pilot in command.
Mm-hmm.
You're in charge of that aircraft.
In the left seat.
Oh, and you got, it's your baby, right? There is no feeling. And I know that's going to be another one of those feelings where, you know, I cried with the ATC. I literally cried on the radio with them. They were like, what's wrong with this kid?
Right.
But I think if you're intimately in touch with who you are, your heart, you are moved constantly. And all throughout the day, as I'm working or I'm working with a brand, I'm in touch with my heart. Okay, that might sound cheesy, but I'm in touch with my heart. So when I'm working with Chef Katsuya and Chef Katsuya comes next to me and we're doing something, I'm moved by that. I'm living in that moment of I'm next to this celebrity chef. It's like people dream about that, right? I was on a yacht in Monaco 2 weeks ago. People dream about that. Yeah. You know, that's just a byproduct of what I've done for a living, right? People dream about renting yacht for $200,000 a day. I mean, some of these are extremely expensive, right? Or $100,000 a day. And just to be on there. But I'm very present to that. So in that moment, I'm more alive than anything because I get to experience it.
And are those the rewarding parts of your work?
Oh, absolutely. I think, look, I'll tell you, if you're inspired by who you are and what you do for people, there is no better way to live your day when you're in touch with your intimacy and your heart, right? And your heart matches that jet, right? Or your heart matches that car or whoever you're branding that moment. I think that's just, isn't there a better place to live than that?
That's true.
Right? And that's
you're
why
you're in sync.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I do what I do, you know, and I don't overdo work because I want those moments. I want to feel my life. I don't want to watch it go by, right?
How do you set boundaries between your followers, your people you're interacting with on social media, and yourself? Is there such a thing, or you have set boundaries? I guess it goes back to the question of privacy as well.
So, look, I'm not famous, so I don't have that problem. Sorry, I'm not famous,
everything
right?
is relative.
So I don't have that problem. I don't have anyone coming to me and asking me for stuff. And I see that all the time. You know, I see celebrities around me all the time. I'm like, people are rushing at them and taking pictures. And I understand what they're dealing with. That's a big concern when you're trying to eat food and there's 20 people trying to take your picture or taking right. an autograph. And then if you don't take a picture, they get mad at you. I don't know. I don't have that problem to deal with. And honestly, I think if you love everyone, it doesn't make a difference. People just want attention. If you give them the attention, if it's something bad they're trying to do, they go away anyway. If it's attention that you gave them, if it's good, they're going to love it and walk away anyway. I think you just got to be that way. Did that answer your question?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, indeed. Alan, I really appreciate you coming by today. This was a lot of fun. Thank you. I learned a lot. Even though I thought I know you, but I learned a lot more about you, which I appreciate. And being someone who loves aviation, I love flying, not as a pilot, but right. flying, going places with the airplanes, I really get what you're doing. And I love your videos from Van Nuys Airport here or anywhere else for that matter.
Right.
When you're going here, there, I love that. And love the whole... I love the jet fuel, as you said, described earlier at the airport.
It's just, you know, I'm sure that experience is the same for people that are doing other things. But for me, as soon as I get to the airport, just...
I'm relaxed.
Yeah, it's just something amazing that comes on. I know people go to the airport, they're like... I'm
the opposite. I just got back from Armenia and Georgia a couple of weeks ago. With all these connections through Warsaw, right. through Tiflis, through Paris, through here, through there. I don't sweat it. I love that experience. I love being in airports. So I appreciate you being here today and telling us all about it. Thank you very much. And remember, always drink the good stuff. Cheers, everybody.